Hello, and welcome to Words of Wisdom, a podcast dedicated to reflecting on the wisdom of the Book of Proverbs. Your host is Dr. Jerry Weirwool, who will share life-giving truth from Proverbs that will help us become wise and discerning. Wisdom is a journey, and we hope you will join us for this exciting adventure.
Proverbs 11:30 reads, "The fruit of a righteous person is a tree of life, and the wise person takes away souls from death." This proverb can be viewed as a blend of synonymous and synthetic parallelism, depending upon how you look at it. While it's true that both halves of the verse share some parallel concepts, such as the righteous person and the wise person, and also the tree of life and takes away souls from death, if that is the correct way to understand the final phrase of the verse. But there are some marked differences, such as the fruit of the righteous person is not the righteous person themselves. And the metaphor, tree of life, may hold a significantly different meaning to the idea of taking away souls. Well, first off, in the beginning, the fruit of the righteous person is a tree of life. This is an elliptical phrase in that the fruit of the righteous person is like the fruit of the tree of life. The fruit here refers metaphorically to the product and outworking of one's life, and especially through their wise instruction, their discipline, and their teaching. But by extension, it can also include basically everything a person says, thinks, or does. Now, wisdom itself is called a tree of life in Proverbs chapter 3, verse 18. And naturally, the fruit of the righteous person are these life-giving results that issue from their wise words and deeds. Thus, to be a tree of life, the righteous person's life becomes a source of healing, nourishment, and vitality for all who eat of their fruit. We have all probably known someone whose presence just seems to make others spiritually and morally stronger. Maybe it's someone in your church congregation, maybe it's a close friend, or perhaps a sibling. Whoever it is, you have observed how their life consistently produces good fruit. I have a friend named Jeff, who is considerably older than me, but we have bonded over the years, and he's become a dear friend of mine. I have personally witnessed, too many times to count, situations where he has acted with discretion, prudence, and grace, and I have observed his fruit to be like a tree of life for those around him. And there have been many times in my life where he has offered sound advice, helped me figure out a godly resolution to a relationship conflict, and steered me back toward the road of wisdom when I seem to have taken a wrong turn somewhere along the way. Jeff truly has been a tree of life, both to me and many others. I can remember this one time when I was in a real pickle. I had developed a growing tension with a work colleague and didn't know what to do about it. So I called Jeff and explained the situation. In the midst of explaining how the tension had developed and grown over time, I also shared how I had withdrawn from having open communication with this individual because of the tension and the potential for real conflict. And I also divulged a number of important details that I had kept to myself because I predicted that they would further negatively affect our working relationship. And I can remember it as clear today as when he first spoke these words years ago, when he said, "Jerry, you've already negatively affected the relationship. You just don't know it yet." Those words pierced me like a dagger in my soul, because what I realized in that moment was that Jeff was totally right. The damage had already been done, and it was only a matter of time or circumstance until the effects were truly felt in the relationship. I remember the first part of his advice was to call up my colleague and confess everything. Jeff said that until I do that, the damage will just continue to grow under the surface, and whenever the truth comes out down the road, the effect will be even worse. So I took Jeff's wise advice and called my colleague and told him everything. The relationship worsened for some time after that, but gradually it has recovered and grown stronger and more resilient than ever. The fruit from Jeff's counsel certainly has been a tree of life for me. Well, going back to the proverb, the more interesting aspect of this verse comes in the second half, which says, "And the wise person takes away souls from death." The first thing to mention is that the Hebrew word translated souls just refers to living people and can also be translated as lives. But what is most interesting is that it seems there is an intentional irony and wordplay going on, since in the six other occurrences of the Hebrew phrase that is translated to take away, which in the translation, the wise person takes away souls from death has been added for clarification and isn't in the Hebrew text. But the Hebrew phrase that's translated takes away souls, this phrase to take away, all the occurrences, the six other occurrences, they all imply taking away a person's life in the sense of to destroy or kill. But according to Proverbs, the wise would never act in this way, and the effect of wisdom is not the loss of one's life, but the preservation of it. So translators have proposed two choices. Either amend, mean modify, the Hebrew text, so that it then would be translated as violence takes away lives, or interpret the irony as suggesting that the wise take away lives or take away souls from death. Furthermore, there might be a thematic parallel with Proverbs chapter 13, verse 14, which says, "The instruction of a wise person is a fountain of life, that one may turn aside from the snares of death." The fountain of life represents the life-giving effects of the wise instruction for those who drink of it, and the snares are the traps that capture and destroy those who follow the road of foolishness, wickedness, and death. In the same way, in Proverbs chapter 11, verse 30, the second line adds that for those who eat from the life-giving fruit of the righteous person, it will take them away. The wise person will take them away, that is, save them from death. While there is certainly an eschatological reference to death as the final death, there's probably also an immediate significance in the here and now, where death refers to premature physical death, or metaphorically, any destructive or harmful circumstance or death-dealing influence in one's life. Thus, the wise person preserves and enhances the lives of others, taking them away from misfortune and tragedy. But ultimately, the wise person is rescuing others from being forever separated from their Creator through their everlasting death and destruction in the final judgment. It probably doesn't need to be stated how important it is to share the good news about the redemption that God has accomplished through His Son, Jesus Christ. But what I think probably many people don't realize is that caring for the souls of the lost and seeking to reach them is part of living with wisdom. I can say for myself that before studying the book of Proverbs, I probably wouldn't have put evangelism in the same category as wisdom. Sure, evangelism is vital and important for all believers to engage in, but to me, living with wisdom was about making good choices in life that produce godly results. But what I've learned from an in-depth study of the book of Proverbs is that righteousness and wise living yield godly results both for myself and others. So according to the book of Proverbs, a righteous person is concerned with how to protect and advantage other people, not merely themselves. So when it comes to being concerned about the well-being of others, both now and in God's future kingdom, it makes perfect sense that seeking to take away souls from death would be part of how to live with God's wisdom. Thus, to be wise and to live with the fear of Yahweh, one must be aware of their own humble obedience to Yahweh's rule and authority and how to receive the gift of life in His kingdom, but also for others to do likewise and experience the everlasting joy of being in His presence forever in the age to come. In order to illustrate this proverb, I want to tell the story of Edward Kimball. But that story begins with a young boy named Dwight. Dwight was born on February 5th in 1837 in Northfield, Massachusetts, as the seventh of nine children in his family. His father, a stonemason who also worked the family farm, died when Dwight was only 4 years old, A month later, his mother, Betsy, gave birth to two twins that left a widowed mother with 9 children and very little money. The house was mortgaged, creditors came and took nearly everything of value. And so Dwight grew up with a very meager childhood, having to work for cornmeal and milk 3 times a day. But Dwight disliked the food so much that after 19 consecutive meals of cornmeal and milk, he asked his older brother to be released from an agreement to work for a neighbor for his own board during the winter while he was attending school. Now, at age 17, Dwight left his own hometown of Northfield for Boston. He had an uncle there who owned a shoe store, Holton's Shoe Store, and had agreed to take him in, give him room and board, and pay him, but only under one condition. Dwight had to attend church. Well, Dwight agreed. He had only a 5th grade education, but he was an energetic and personable individual, and he was a little rough around the edges. His education was poor, and he could barely read. Still, he went to church because that was the rule of the house. At church, a layman named Edward Kimball taught a Sunday school class for teenage boys. Kimball was a businessman, not a minister. He tried to meet each student with patience and practical help. When Dwight entered the class, Kimball did not embarrass him for what he did not know. On one of Dwight's first Sundays, Kimball asked the class to turn to the Gospel of John. Dwight started searching the Old Testament, but was unable to find it. Kimball quietly handed Dwight his own Bible, already open to the passage, and said not to worry. He could work on learning the books of the Bible later. For about a year, Kimball met Dwight where he was, answering questions, modeling steady Christian character, and showing care and concern for Dwight's life. By the time Dwight turned 18, he had still not made a personal confession of faith in Christ. He was attending, listening, and learning, but he had not decided whether to believe in Christ or not. Thus, Kimball decided to set out for the shoe store to talk with the young lad. Here is what Kimball recorded about his thoughts from that day and his interaction with Dwight. Quote, "I determined to speak to him about Christ and about his soul and started down to Holton's shoe store. When I was nearly there, I began to wonder whether I ought to go in just then during business hours. I thought that possibly my call might embarrass the boy, and that when I went away, the other clerks would ask who I was and taunt him with my efforts in trying to make him a, quote, good boy. In the meantime, I'd passed the store, and discovering this, I determined to make a dash for it and have it over at once. I found Dwight in the back part of the building, wrapping up shoes. I went up to him at once, and putting my hand on his shoulder, I made what I afterwards felt was a very weak plea for Christ. I don't know just what words I used, nor could Dwight remember. I simply told him of Christ's love for him and the love Christ wanted in return. That was all there was. It seemed the young man was just ready for the light that then broke upon him, and there, in the back of that store in Boston, he gave himself and his life to Christ." Well, Dwight went on to become one of America's most well-known and beloved preachers and evangelists. However, most people know him as D.L. Moody. Over his lifetime, Moody founded several Christian institutions, including the famous school that became the Moody Bible Institute, training people in Bible education and practical Christian service. Moody died in 1899, but it is amazing to see how his influence has spread beyond the small stockroom where he first trusted in Christ, all because a Sunday school teacher chose to take him away from death. Kimball knew the wisdom of bringing Dwight to a decision point about Christ, and he didn't hesitate to act. On that day, while walking down the street, being concerned for Dwight's salvation became an urgent need that Kimball knew he needed to pursue, and so he turned around immediately, went back to the store to speak with Dwight. If we wait for a convenient time when we have nothing going on or it doesn't require us shifting around our schedules or interests, we will probably just be constantly thinking, maybe it's better another time. But life has a way of filling our days with more things than we could ever achieve. And the world is an expert at throwing distractions in front of us and deterring our focus from what really matters, everlasting life. The wise know the value of life for every person, both now and in the age to come, and will not wait for the right moment to just present itself. but will actively seek to take away souls from death, whenever and wherever they can. This is the wisdom of the proverb.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Words of Wisdom podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, we would be so appreciative if you would share this podcast with your friends. And if you have been blessed by this work, please consider supporting the podcast by clicking on the donation link in the description.